B-Pod Studios.
Toucher and Rich are back on TV.
I really didn't know that.
Twitch.tv. Follow the Sports Hub. Watch and react with 98.5 The Sports Hub.
And by the way, when I talk about human trafficking, I'm talking about the general subject of human trafficking, the larger picture. There is no allegation that any of the defendants were involved with human trafficking. They are not being charged as such. But instead of talking about a particular defendant, I'd like to make the conversation broader because this country needs to have a reality check on what's going on out there when it comes to forced labor and forced sexual conduct.
Now, 98.5 Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. I think this is the make or break segment. I believe our program director is listening. He's going to make the call if I should go home.
Well, this is that right there, by the way, that was Dave Ehrenberg. He is the Palm Beach County State Attorney. And once again, just putting officially on the record, none of these people who got their warrants yesterday had any idea of what was going on behind the scenes with the sex trafficking.
Did a very good job of painting the broader picture, too.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, when this thing first broke, there was a bunch of questions, and I'm like, oh, boy, is this... I mean, the fact that... My first question was, if you knew there was a crime going on there, why did you continue to let it go on for so long and monitor it? And then, obviously, you start to read about it, and you see the bigger scope of things that they were trying to get behind. This ring of human trafficking that was going on that apparently I've learned more about than I've ever thought I would, where these women who were working at this spa, they only stayed there for a short amount of time, and then they would get moved to a different location. And I don't know whether to keep the scent off the trail of any kind of human trafficking or why that was done the way it was, but
maybe to bring in new faces to attract, have the clientele come back.
Maybe.
So what happens is these women come in, they get their passports taken away. They're promised, and they're not promised, like, great jobs. I mean, these women are not looking for, you know, $1 million. They're, you know, offered waiting jobs or, like, they think they're going to be offered waitress jobs or cleaning jobs. And then they, you know, have no money. They have no passport. And they're essentially locked into these spas, and they have to sleep on the tables where all the Johns were.
Oh, and they're like they're eating off like hot plates in the alley behind the place.
Yeah, and then there's like no showers. It's just like a sink and a toilet.
Whenever they leave the spa, they had to go with someone to make sure they're kept track of.
Yeah.
Right. They have like no idea. A lot of them have no idea about like what day it is. Right.
They're essentially paying back a debt for being brought over here. Obviously against their will. But then you read the sheer volume of work that these women did. And one of the reports that came out was that any given woman that worked at a spa like this could service up to 1,000 men a year. That's, I can't even think. I mean, if you just worked every day of the year, it's like three guys a day. But I mean, can you imagine this? And I don't know. I still don't understand why this particular place catered to the billionaires all over when it just looks like such a... Because couldn't you... Okay.
I have a theory.
All right.
But and this has nothing to do with Robert Kraft, so everyone relax.
Just in general.
I have a theory, and it doesn't change anything that happened. This is not an attack on anyone. I think that most likely the woman that ran this place, because she was in charge of other things too, right? Or was it just this place?
Not that I know of.
I thought that she was involved with the movement of the girls. I got to believe that, you know, people trusted her. Like that she had, I mean, when Kraft came in, he allegedly like hugged her and you know, knew her. So I'm wondering if she kind of ran in circles with these guys. I mean, she's born in 60.
Maybe. Who was the guy that got busted with the high price prostitute? The one who was a congressman, and she was actually somewhat attractive.
Oh no, that was a prosecutor, right?
Yeah.
He was in New York.
Yeah. Spitzer, Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
So isn't there, like, if you're a guy who has billions of dollars, It wouldn't be tough, from everything that I've learned from stories in the press, for you to have somebody come to you, right? I mean, isn't there like a fairly big industry
to get that done? Yeah, yes.
You know what I mean?
Eros.com.
Absolutely. So why was this place the chosen stop for all of these hedge fund guys and people with tons of money.
You know why I know Eros.com?
That was a mic drop look. For those of you on Twitch, the look I just got from Fred.
It was almost like a Groucho Marx eyebrows thing.
So anyway, I met this guy in line at a bar when we first moved here. And he had, like, his picture with all these, like, porn stars. And he was like, I'm like, how are you dating all these porn stars? He's like, dating them. He's like, nah. He's like, I'm paying for it. And I'm like, what do you mean? It's so funny. I was like, but they're stars. And he goes, yeah, Eros.com. So immediately I was like, what, Eros.com? And then they're going, wow, you can have sex with porn stars. I didn't do anything about it, but there you go. Right.
But it was just right there, like it was like a menu, and like you could like put in cart.
Yeah, but then
I'll take two of those.
It's not all porn stars. There's also like, but then there's these message boards that you have to. Now, here's something that I'm very surprised that people do is that you have to register for access to these message boards that kind of talk about. Like, you know, what their experiences was like with these girls.
Yeah.
Which I did not trudge into that area, but that is, but yeah, I mean, there are prostitutes and escorts that deal with the very rich that are with companies that enjoy it.
That's why this was so strange. Yeah. That's why this whole thing is so weird.
But maybe it's just the idea that I go in here. Like, I know the woman that runs it. I'm not saying they go out to dinner, but I know the woman that runs it. I go in, I'm in and out, and, you know, there's not the hassle. Maybe you feel even more that you trust this woman and that you're more anonymous because, obviously, you know, this is just, if you...
Like, maybe this person doesn't know who I am.
Yeah, and then there's always that
Whereas
thing.
if you're somebody who goes to an expensive hotel room, yes. You'll know this is somebody important, right. And they'll ask around. Okay, I guess I understand that.
Yeah, so, yeah, of course. And then you have them in your hotel room, and then they notice that it's you.
There's questions, right.
Right, so you trust this woman that runs this place, and she, if any information were to get out, she would squash it. So I guess maybe that's why.
Well, the state attorney was asked about whether or not Robert Kraft was being unfairly targeted in this, and his name was something that they were flaunting around, and I thought he had a pretty good answer.
It's hard to say that any one person is being targeted when there have been 25 arrests. These are people from all walks of life, all socioeconomic statuses. So it is crazy to think that we're targeting one person when... Mr. Kraft got caught up in the midst of a larger sting that netted hundreds of people through many different counties. Misdemeanors will rarely result in actual jail time for people with a clean record, but you never know what could happen. It's up to a court if it goes to trial. But usually when cases like this, you have diversion programs and other ways to dispose of the case, but it's up to the defense, it's up to our prosecutors, and ultimately the sentence is up to the judge.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's no way you can say he's being singled out. I mean, all these other people, I mean, right. All the names are out there on this list.
And the videos could come out, but, okay, so the lawyer on ESPN I heard yesterday said that that Kraft is going to be special for the prosecution, no matter what they say, because of his notoriety. And then he was asked, what about the person that... ran a Citigroup or whatever it was.
Yeah, there was like a hedge fund guy,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the guy's like, well, no one cares. They're not going to care about that.
You can't sell that video. Like, if this is going to get out before the public is able to get it, like during, because they're saying the reason the Kraft one would come out so early is that so many hands have been on it.
Right.
And that it could be worth up to seven figures.
But he was saying even the prosecution, like if Kraft chose to fight this, might go, okay, you know, you're going to try to publicly destroy this investigation, and that they might push a little bit harder against him to make things more difficult. Now, I don't believe this, but he was even speculating that if this went to trial, that prosecution would push for jail time. They'd be asking for jail time. That was his opinion.
By the way, Eros.com is still up and running, apparently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Nothing wrong with it.
You've checked in recently?
Somebody said it's like the fire app, but for sex.
Ah.
What's the fire app?
You know, Fire Festival, where you can get Ja Rule whenever you want to play at your house.
Sure, oh, okay.
That was the whole thing with the Fire Festival. It was based on an app where you could get your favorite band or artist to come and play at your house.
Yeah, my whole focus during that thing was why people were paying attention to Ja Rule. That Ja Rule could... Well, we were talking... I asked you yesterday. I said, if we were in our meeting right now and Ja Rule came in and started asking us to do things, I'd be like, why would I listen to, of all people on the planet, to Ja Rule?
Did you see that clip of Ja Rule?
Yes.
At the... Oh, it was the Milwaukee Bucks thing?
Yeah, we're bouncing all over, but
okay,
I have it.
So real quick, Ja Rule did a halftime for 90s night at a Milwaukee Bucks game.
Huh.
And you just listen to the crowd and just know... This is from the feed that's in the arena. Here is the crowd reaction to Ja Rule playing a halftime show at the Milwaukee Bucks game.
That's all frozen.
I'm an ass man.
He actually covered Ass Man, the Billy Gunn theme. Well, I guess that maybe we'll play that. Oh, here, I think
this
I got
is from
it.
Last
I
week.
I got it right here, Fred.
This is
I
last
it.
Week.
I got it. Here you go.
If y'all want to win this game tonight, and the Bucks is definitely going to win tonight, let me hear y'all one time make some noise for the Bucks.
Okay, so that's part of it. Now, what you didn't hear is at the beginning and end is the clip you got right there. Is it playing?
No, it's all changed.
Well, of course it's not because it's how we roll. Because we talked about it. That's why. There was zero crowd reaction.
Yeah.
Zero. At the beginning, it's like, hey, what's up, everybody?
You know, it's funny, I'm playing 90s night, considering, well, I guess my first album came out in 99. And then, then he goes, everyone makes some noise, and it was dead quiet. And he goes, I guess not.
Yeah. And it was just, the entire place was just like, there was no one cheering, no one applauding.
I would venture to guess that 80% of the audience didn't know who he was.
Man, those are hits, though.
No, I know.
The songs he was playing, okay. Like, I mean, Ja Rule had, like, three big songs.
But if I'm under 30, I have no idea who he is.
No, sure you do. Sure you do.
What? From what?
Because they're like the throwbacks. Everyone's into those.
I mean, yeah, but I don't know if that's Ja Rule.
I mean, you were a kid when if you're 30, then you were like a kid and probably like a teen when you were listening to this stuff.
Yeah, a lot of time has passed since then, and if you're older, you probably don't know who it is.
But I mean, when you're a teen, that's when music means the most to you. So they're all, oh, my babies will be living it up. Is it? You know, they're doing that, and the I'm Real with Jennifer Lopez. That was a massive hit.
But if I'm 20, I was born in 99.
Yeah, but you said 30.
Yeah, okay, so then I was born in...
Yeah, you were a teen when the stuff was big. Early 2000s.
Well, they certainly didn't seem to know who he was.
And I'm a baby who'll be living it up.
Like, I know you could probably know those. I mean, those songs don't resonate still.
The best, however, was you had Giannis coming out and putting up shots right in the middle of their set. Like, the dancers are in the way.
No.
And he's just like, dude, I got to practice. So he comes out and just starts putting shots up. And, like, meanwhile, Ja Rule's doing his thing. No one's paying attention.
All right. So here it is. It's coming down. Should I leave the show today?
Our boss has tweeted out a response.
Okay. What is the response, Dan O'Brien?
The text that I got said, send Fred to the principal's office, tell him to call his mom and have him picked up.
That's the tweet. Tell Froggy he should go to the principal's office and call his mom to pick him up.
All right, so I'm out of here?
I don't know. It seems he's leaning that way. I don't know. I think we need official confirmation, but that text sure seems that way.
Stay for the Haggerty interview, then go, because I got to go edit some stuff for 8 o'clock. You guys are going to do a hockey thing. We get the hockey boys right here. You
all
know?
Right, that's fair.
I'm not putting my... So I should leave.
That's what it seems like. He didn't say, tell Fred to go home, but it seems that's
said
the
to have
way
him
looks.
Get picked. Yeah. Joking, saying, go to the principal's office and have your mom come pick you up.
Okay.
It's a backhanded slap to tell you to go home.
Stay for the Haggerty thing, because Haggerty's going to talk 98% of the time anyway.
He's got a point about that.
All right, I'll stay for Haggerty, and then I'll go.
Okay, that's right. Good.
Very good. All right, and then I will go to the doctor today.
Okay.
And I'll get this cleared up. All right, we'll be right back.
There's someone very special I want you guys to meet.
Toucher and Rich.
I just want to tell you both good luck.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
985, the Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. This is my final break today.
Yep.
I probably should have gone home yesterday.
Boss has made his decision.
Yes. All right, Joe Haggerty, he of NBC Boston Sports. He's got to leave it to the puck pals. Johnny and Freddie.
Rich has stepped out.
Yeah, he said, you guys handle the puck. You guys handle the puck. Joe Haggerty, how are you doing?
Freddie, do I need to goggle some tacks to talk to you today?
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, what's up? It's Pharrell. Hey, how you doing? All right. You're the man now. You're the man. I got to pour one out. All right, so, okay, so Johansson is obviously a big disappointment, but I want to talk about a couple of things that have been on my mind. First of all, what could have, in your opinion, could they have made a better deal in the offseason? Okay, that's my first thing, a question.
I mean, it's easier to make a deal in the offseason than it is at the deadline, potentially. I mean, the bottom line, I think, what you're getting at is they knew this was going to be a need all year. They knew from the summertime they needed at least one more forward, probably two, where they were hoping young guys were going to be able to fill those roles. And, you know, I can sort of understand where they're coming from because Donato was really good towards the end of last year. Heinen had a good year. You expect or hope that one of those two guys makes an even a step even forward from there, and, you know, they can become a top six forward. You hope one of those young guys steps in and becomes the third line center, whether it was JFK or Trent Frederick. So, like, I understand the stance that they had, and, you know, they had some luck with the youth the year before, so they were thinking that may happen again and they could continue to develop those players and have them fill the roles that they needed. But, yes, the bottom line to your question is it's easier in the summertime to fill a need like that, to find somebody that can come in and do the job, than it is at the trade deadline when, you know, you've got your sights set on a few things. You've got a lot of other suitors. You know, it gets down to like 30, 20, 10 minutes left to go. And, you know, if you don't get the person that you wanted, then you're stuck with plan C or plan D or whatever. And you know, essentially that's what it came down to for the Bruins. They weren't willing to spend a first-round pick. They weren't willing to trade Juro Vaakanainen, and they weren't willing to trade Jake DeBrusk or Charlie McAvoy or any of these prime assets that they have in order to make a deal. If you're not willing to do those kind of things, you're not going to get the best players on the market. That's just what it comes down to. So they give up a second and a fourth for Marcus Johansson, who is, you know, Johansson and Coyle are both pretty good third line players, very good third line players, but neither one of those is top six forward. So they still don't have that top six forward they were looking for.
All right. So let's go through who was available at the deadline. They did not have enough to get Mark Stone. Would you agree?
Well, they might've had enough if they wanted to trade McAvoy, I think. But even then, you know, he's coming up on a big contract.
Right.
Not sure, you know, Vegas was going to want to pay that. Is Juro Vaakanainen as good as the defenseman that got traded, from Vegas? I'm not sure, maybe. But the Bruins weren't willing to deal him either way. And the problem becomes, Fred, even if they had the package together to get Mark Stone, I don't think they were going to have the appetite to pay him almost $10 million a year on a very long-term contract like that. So you put all that together, and I just don't think it was going to be realistic that was going to happen based on all the other young guys that they've got to pay and based on their cap situation. I just don't think they were going to be able to do that.
All right. If I'm not mistaken, Nyquist from Detroit had a no-trade thing with certain teams, and Boston was on it. He didn't want to come to Boston.
He didn't want to, no, he wanted to go to San Jose.
Okay.
And I think Detroit was working with him to make that happen. He wanted to go play with his buddy Erik Karlsson out in San Jose. And I think they told him if they were going to trade him, they were going to try to trade him where he wanted to go. And I think to a degree they accommodated him, as well as he had, you know, some power in his contract to make that happen. So, could the Bruins have offered even more to try to get him? Maybe, but do you want to offer a couple of second-round picks for a rental and
right.
Gustav Nyquist? I'm not sure you do. I mean, the one guy, Fred, I look at and say, and I've said it's a broken record with this player, but and he's not having the greatest year, but I really like Wayne Simmonds. I thought he would have been a good fit here. I think the equivalent of what Nashville gave up to get him was like maybe Danton Heinen in a fourth-round pick, and I would have been willing to do that to get a few months of Wayne Simmonds, and maybe he likes it here, maybe you like him. Maybe it re-energizes him to be with a team like the Bruins, and you can sign him to a reasonable, you know, extension after that if all parties involved want to make that happen. And maybe, you know, you can make it work with Simmons like you couldn't make it work with Rick Nash the year before. I just think he has the potential to be a top six guy, and he has the potential to make an impact if you play a team like Tampa Bay later on in the playoffs. Whereas, you know, I'm not sure Johansson and Coyle, aside from giving you depth, five-on-five scoring-wise, are going to make that kind of an impact. They're just not top-six talents in my mind. So I would have rather have them gone for the player that might have made an impact rather than players, you know, are probably not going to make an impact. But, you know, they decided to go in a different direction for a number of reasons. Because of the decline in Simmons' game, maybe they were wondering how he would fit in the dressing room as opposed to a guy like Johansson. I'm not sure exactly what their thinking was there, but clearly they didn't want to offer a package like that to get him, which they could have definitely done.
All right. Do you think Philadelphia accepts a package like that from the Bruins, given that they're in the same conference?
Yeah, because, I mean, Philly's not going to realistically get in the playoffs this year. I think within conference, yes. Do I think it would have been tougher? And this is another stumbling block with the Stone trade. Would the Ottawa have traded within their division a player like Mark Stone, you know, that they're going to have to see, at least a few times a season? And if you sign him to a contract, you know, forever, he's torturing you and playing good games against you. There's a reason Ottawa traded Erik Karlsson and Mike Hoffman when they traded them to the West Coast. And they did the same thing, essentially, with Mark Stone, and I think that's their MO. I don't think they want to trade within their division. So I would say with Stone, that would have been a bigger problem than with Simmons. I think Philly would have done it. I think Philly was going to take the best value. Philly wanted a first-round pick for Wayne Simmons. They got nowhere close.
At
the end of the day.
They got kind of screwed at the end of the day.
I think if the Bruins stepped up and made a comparable or better, slightly better deal than what Nashville gave to get him, I think they could have had him. I think at this point, the Flyers were going to get the best value for that player based on his declining value.
All right. Wallach seems to think that Johansson's going to hold a grudge against Marchand. Obviously, if you don't know, Johansson last year was elbowed fairly violently by, don't worry, everyone, I'm leaving soon, by Marchand last year. And he
leaving missed... this planet or just leaving the studio?
We'll see. I climbed the stairs this morning to get up here. And, like, my chest was just like, no. I worked out yesterday.
That wasn't smart. That wasn't smart at all.
I, like, begged the trainer. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm sick.
That's not
like,
smart.
I don't think you want me to do this. And he's like, no, it's fine. And I'm okay, okie dokie.
Well, you look good.
I don't feel bad. I said my chest. All right, listen. Okay,
so
Johansson got concussed by Marchand. He was obviously unhappy about it. Now, what do you... Wallach seems to think that there's going to be a little bit of residual hatred from Johansson towards Marchand. What's your opinion on that?
Do you really think a rental player, a guy that's only going to be here for a few months, is going to come in and, you know, have this fiery hatred for a guy that's one of the best players and leaders on the team and one of the best players in the league? I think Marchand has this ability. Like, guys hate him when they play against him, obviously, and especially if something like that happens towards them. You know, they're going to hold a grudge when it's the opponent. But I think Marchand, his personality, I think he disarms people when you see him every day and you realize he's a different guy than you thought he was based on some of his actions on the ice. And I think that's going to be the case with Johansson. And maybe he comes in here, you know, with a slight grudge going in, even though – you know, yesterday he said to Don Sweeney, you know, I'm glad he's on my team now rather than playing against him. So, you know, he said all the right things. And I think he'll come in here and I think he'll get into the Bruins fold and that'll be it. You know, hockey players, usually it's more with fights than with hits like this. But hockey players have an ability to really bury things like that quickly when you become teammates with somebody and leave it in the past. And I think this will be the same case. And I think Marchand will make that happen too. I think he's going to probably... you know, do his best to make amends to a player. And I think he probably feels badly about what happened and that he, you know, missed most of last season because of that concussion. So I think it'll be water under the bridge at the end of the day. And, you know, they'll move on. That's just what hockey players do.
Okay, Joe, real quick, last question about this and the trade deadline. It looks like the Bruins have a core of impact players that are in their 30s and maybe have two or three years left of their prime before they start to decline. And they have a bunch of 20-somethings, except for Pastrnak, that are due contract. It seems like there's not much impact in between. How does Don Sweeney move forward knowing that if you're going to make another cup run, it has to happen soon?
Yeah, I mean, this is a difficult one. I think he's going to have to do something in the summertime that's much more impactful, you know, for next season and beyond, if he really wants to make a move on Tampa Bay and he really wants to, you know, seize hold of the Eastern Conference. They need to land one of these big fish. They need to land one of these big players. Be willing to pay the money, be willing to spend the assets in terms of draft picks and prospects, be willing to do whatever it takes to get it done, to get that kind of player in there based on the division that they're in and the teams that they're going to have to go up against in the playoffs. You know, it's, you hate to plan against, you know, opponents and sort of strategize what you're going to do building your roster based on what other people are doing. But, you know, the bottom line and the reality is that Tampa Bay is much better than the Bruins right now on paper. And after these moves, obviously getting Charlie Coyle, getting Marcus Johansson, the Bruins are better. There's no question they made upgrades. And these players are going to give them better 5-on-5 scoring. They're going to have more of a third line now. You know, they're going to be tougher to defend against, all of that stuff. But they're still, I don't think, have really made big gains on Tampa Bay. And I think this roster now is comparable to last season's roster. And I think if they meet Tampa Bay in the second round, they're again going to lose in 5 games. And I don't think it's going to be all that close. So, you know, they need to go out and get at least one more impact player to that lineup of forward, the guy that can score goals, or just, you know, hope that some of these young players really make leaps and bounds. You love what you've seen lately out of Charlie McAvoy. You know, Jake DeBrusque has really been good lately, but I think you know what you have in Jake DeBrusque. I'm not sure Danton Heinen is going to ever be that player. I think we've seen enough to know that. So I think they need to find somewhere another winger that can score, and that's going to be Don Sweeney's biggest to-do thing in the offseason, just like it was last year. Didn't get it done last summer. You know, the Bruins fans have to hope he gets it done this summer.
All right. Well, Joe Haggerty, it is a pleasure, sir. Thank you for your insight, and we will talk to you soon.
Freddie, if I never talk to you again, if you don't make it out of this horrible funk that your voice is in, it was a pleasure and an honor.
All right. Well, listen, I signed up for short-term disability, so I'm all right. All right, gentlemen, what do you got coming up there as I hit the old dusty trail?
Oh, all sorts of hot takes. Harvey Fierstein, you have yourself a great rest
feel
of the day.
Marvelous. Feel better.
Marvelous.
Just do the line from an Independence Day. Just go, oh, crap. It's pretty good, dude.
I can do it anyway, even without the voice. You just give it a little goose. All right, so you gentlemen have a great rest of the day. Plenty to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
That'll do it for myself. Bye.
Listening at home to Toucher and Rich is simple with your Amazon or Google smart speaker.
Oh, I need one of those.
Just say, play 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Now, I hear all these criticisms about Boston. They're just going to flop around like a dead fish in the playoffs. No, they're not. They're going to win the East. At minimum, they're going to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but put it down. Three best teams in the league are Golden State 1, Houston 2, Boston 3rd. You're falling forward again. Ooh, Denver. Ooh, Toronto. Ooh, Milwaukee. Kyrie Irving came out yesterday and said, you're not beating us 4 times. We're all good. But Colin, what about the chemistry issues? Folks, the chemistry issues sort of disappear in the playoffs because everybody knows, okay, let's get over our little tiffs, urgency here. By the way, Cleveland last year, nothing but chemistry issues. Playoffs start. Sweep, sweep, sweep. 7 games, get to finals. What about their chemistry? What about it? Golden State has chemistry issues last 2 years with Kevin Durant and Draymond. Disappears in the playoffs.
985 of Sports Hub. It is Rich and Wallach because Fred is turned into a gurgling mess. We thought he'd get home and be able to rest his voice, hopefully get a steroid or something to help out with that sucker. We'll be listening this morning at 7:50 for your chance to score a pair of tickets to go see, it says Korn and Alice in Chains, but I'm going to say Alice in Chains and Korn on their 2019 North American tour coming to the Xfinity Center on August 9th. Tickets on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. through all Ticketmaster outlets. That's coming up at 7:50. Alice in Chains with their new singer is excellent. William Duvall is a great frontman. That is a show you should see. And okay, if you're someone like me, hopefully Alice in Chains is first so you can be in bed by 10.
Why would Korn be second?
Well, Korn's going to headline. Korn's huge. They were huge. Like, I mean,
yes.
For a while, they were massive.
Are they still?
Well, but they also have, like, most of their original members. I mean, some of the knock on Alice in Chains that, you know, Layne Staley is not alive anymore. However,
like the new version of Alice in Chains is excellent. People don't understand, like, most of the vocals are Jerry Cantrell. Like, a lot of the songs, you know, a lot of the lead is sung by Jerry Cantrell, and you don't realize it until you see them live, because sometimes their voices mesh so perfectly you can't tell who's who. But the guy, William Duvall, sounds like Layne Staley when he wants to, but doesn't try too hard to be Layne Staley. They're excellent.
Okay.
Excellent live. I couldn't recommend anymore. So we'll give away tickets to that at 7:50. But Colin Cowherd is exactly right, and it's something I've been saying for the longest time now. As infuriating as this regular season has been, because every time you think that the Celtics just have their crap together and they're going in the right direction, they lose to some god-awful team, and once again, it's crowned as the worst loss of the regular season, worst loss of the Brad Stevens era, blah, blah, blah. You're not, in my opinion, going to get much worse than what happened against the Clippers. To me, that was it. A lot of people are calling this loss to the Bulls the worst. That Clippers
they're
one
and
one
A. I mean, you, I think if you polled 100 people, 50 would say Clippers, 50 would say last weekend against Chicago.
Bulls were awful. Clippers were worse. That was the worst loss. And that was because it was such a demoralizing. Those Clippers players had barely even played together. It was like just a thrown together mess. They were up by 28, and the Bulls game was awful. I mean, it was bad.
They beat the Bulls by 50 the last time they played them.
But one thing does not change, and that is that we've learned over and over again the regular season doesn't matter, and that every time the Celtics play a decent competition, they rise to the occasion and they play them well. That's why tonight's game means a lot. That's why this game against the Raptors is going to be a good look into whether or not this team truly can get itself together, kind of like they did against the 76ers. It's like they do it again. And there's a lot of these games coming up, too. Like, I mean,
they got to go on the West Coast. They got to go to Golden State. They got to visit the Clippers and the Lakers again. But, Rich, just to backtrack to Colin Cowherd for a second, I mean, Cleveland had the best player on the planet. They also had a core of players that have been to how many straight finals? I mean, the regular season was nothing to them because they had been to so many finals in a row with LeBron there.
Okay, well, look at the East then.
You played. All right, fine. Let's look at the East. Okay. Back last year, Cleveland played Toronto in the second round. They own the Raptors, and that Raptors core had something about LeBron, something about Cleveland. They couldn't beat that team.
Do you know what the Raptors traded away to get Kawhi Leonard? Their entire bench.
I'm aware of that.
So they have is the Raptors are essentially they have one great player on their team.
Over what Philadelphia has.
Well, I've already said that the 76ers seriously. No Celtics fan should take the 76ers seriously.
I guess what I'm saying is the East is different this year than last year.
Sure, but
Toronto couldn't match up with Cleveland for whatever reason.
Okay, so do you have faith in a Milwaukee Bucks team that has never gotten past the first round of the playoffs? They've never won a playoff game with its iteration that they have now.
I just got through telling you a couple of days ago that I don't fear Milwaukee in a playoff series. I fear Toronto. But saying all of that, Cleveland did have a first-round home playoff series, something the Celtics do not have. I think if you consistently have to go on the road in the playoffs, that wears on you a little bit.
Another thing that is being so wildly underrated,
and you can't
is
compare
the
this
lack
Celtic
of having
team to that Cleveland team, regardless of what Cowherd just said.
Well, I think you can in a way that you've got so much talent on this team. I mean, you look at on paper, they have more talent than any other team in the East. Just talent. Like the amount, the sheer amount, looking at
they
benches.
They have more talent and more depth, yes.
More talent, more depth. And when they want to play hard, they look excellent. They look great. I mean, they went to Milwaukee and they lost by one.
On a night that Kyrie shot terribly, 9-27.
Without a doubt, which should give you obviously a lot of faith in this team. It's infuriating. It sucks. It's not fun. And I hate the fact that teams take their feet off the gas during the regular season. Because as a fan, it's basically exposing the truth that we all know that the players believe that none of this matters. Get to the playoffs healthy, and then it's a completely different ball game. And we've seen it time after time after time. And with the Celtics team, you will see tonight that they're going to look like a completely different team than they did against the Bulls. Now, the other thing that's being wildly underrated in all of this is the lack of Aaron Baines. Aaron Baines is a massive difference maker on the defensive side of the ball. And he's been gone for the majority of this month, if not all month.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you take a look at this month as a total, very good month.
February's a good month on the whole for the Boston Celtics.
It's the inconsistency that drives Celtics fans crazy.
And you're right. It's infuriating.
There's
and
no excuse for what happened over the weekend. None.
Other than it's the regular season.
I understand that.
And but they
talent-wise, however, you should be able to roll the ball out there and they should still win by double digits, all things considered.
I mean, listen, I know that the NBA and the NFL are two completely different products, but what did you think after that Tennessee loss?
What are
the Patriots?
The Patriots, I thought that they were in a lot of trouble. I did.
Dolphins. What did you think after that?
I don't know. I was there for that. I was very upset about that.
I mean, there's
that
just
a lot of fun.
There is a mentality, yeah. And the NBA more than any other league, it's that you can just take your foot off the gas, not try as hard. Even Kyrie, I think, when you heard him talking, I mean, he said, listen, we can beat any team in seven games. We're going to be able to beat any. I'm not worried about anybody. And you could say that that's cockiness, or you could say that he truly believes that. And I think that he looks around and goes, man, when we try hard, we are a force. We are an excellent team. And it's going to be a tough out. Like, I mean, the Milwaukee will be a tough seven games or six games, however many you think it is. I mean, Giannis Antetokounmpo might be like a superstar and everyone else pales in comparison, but he is a megastar. I mean, a massive difference maker that can completely change, that can on his own take over a game.
Took the Celtics to seven games last year.
Sure, sure. And now you take, but also once again, you did not have Kyrie Irving. Gordon Hayward once again is playing well. And you just, Colin Coward's exactly right. NBA's weird, and that part of it sucks. And people who have a grudge against the NBA and don't like the NBA, that's one of their biggest points, is that the regular season doesn't matter. And you know what? They are right. They're right. And they don't care, and you've seen it time and time again. And guess what? It's going to happen. Now, there is a different situation in the West that's happening right now, which is hysterical, because as much as LeBron and the Lakers, you know, I always thought that, listen, the Lakers are going to end up being fine once they're in the playoffs because LeBron's going to turn into a monster.
Got to get there first.
Right. They're in 11th place right now. Like, they're in a bad, bad spot. And their road to get to the playoffs doesn't look like it's going to get any easier.
Yeah, they're three games out of a playoff spot. Sacramento is playing very, very well.
Yeah, so I mean, they might be screwed.
Sacramento's right there. There's in the 8-9 line.
You'd have none of that to worry about with the Celtics right now.
On the plus side, that gives the Celtics a lottery pick.
Sure.
At the moment.
Yeah, not bad.
They do. They have
not bad.
They have the lottery pick.
That doesn't suck.
Sacramento, 13 or 14 at the moment.
So I just think that this sucks. I hate the fact that they do this. It's infuriating. The Celtics should be better. And they should have figured all this out by now, but it just doesn't matter. Playoff time, it's a whole new ballgame.
I sincerely hope you are correct. There is evidence to point in that direction, but I would just say one thing. I would think the Celtics would like a top four seed. I think three road playoff series, regardless of the competition, is a lot to ask.
All right, caller number 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. We'll score a pair of tickets to go see Alice in Chains and Korn on their 2019 North American tour, coming to the Xfinity Center on August 9th. Tickets on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. through all Ticketmaster outlets. Caller 10, 617-931-0985.
Listen, watch, and react in real time. Toucher and Rich are on twitch.tv. Just follow the Sports Hub. Sports Hub.
.985 of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich. So, John, yesterday, did you go outside at all yesterday?
I mean, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So, it was unbelievably windy, obviously.
I had my kid stood up and almost knocked over. I mean, I have one son who's very thin. He's about 51 pounds. And we were outside last night, and we were in an alley, and a gust of wind stood him up and almost blew him backwards.
So, I've never felt wind like that. Like yesterday was, I was trying to think, has there been a time where I've felt anything close to that, especially in the city of Boston? So
all the time you spent in Florida, you weren't outside, hurricane winds, that kind of thing?
Nothing like that. I lived in Texas.
Really?
And like Texas storms are crazy.
Right.
This, I don't think I've ever felt anything like I did yesterday. So I went around 4 o'clock or so to go get a haircut. And to do it, I was walking over kind of near where Boston Common is. And there is an alleyway that is right off of the Common. There's like a Dunkin' Donuts there. And I believe it's like over near, over near Summer Street or Winter Street, rather. And so I'm walking down there. And across the alleyway from me, there is a college
aged girl who was looking at her phone, and behind her was a mother who had like her 5-year-old son that she was walking holding his hand. And out of nowhere, this wind gust comes. Now, because we're in an alleyway,
everything is tunneled.
Hits all of the buildings and just whips it. So this wind gust comes, and I have to brace myself, and I look up, and this girl who was looking at her phone gets knocked backwards, plows right into the kid, which pulls the mother down. Boom, boom, boom. Like pins in a bowling alley. All three of them hit the deck.
Everybody okay?
Oh, yeah, they're fine. Okay. I mean, they're all fine. They all landed in a place where they were able to catch themselves.
Yeah.
But I've never seen anything like that before. Like, it looked like a movie where I'm at, like, at a 45-degree angle at one point.
Yeah.
Walking through the wind. So you get to the common, and I'm like, what are all these colorful little baggies all over the ground? And it ends up just every trash can was knocked over and just, like, projectiles, bags of dog crap from people who had walked their dogs and threw in there were flying across the common. Like, I was like,
sounds like one of the circles of hell.
No, I was pelted
with dog crap.
I'm not kidding you. I'm like, what are these, like, colored things that are flying over there?
Yeah.
It would go, like, 3 feet and drop, and then 3 feet and drop. It's because there were these, I guess, dog bags, because I know our dog bags, like, whenever I walk my dog, it's like this bright green. But apparently it's bright pink. There's, like, bright blue. I don't know why they're all bright colors. But sure enough, I mean, it looked like a fireworks display.
In the suburbs, it was an obstacle course driving down side streets because of trash cans.
Oh, sure.
You know what I'm saying? People left trash cans out for trash pickup. And, of course, once those suckers are empty, and sometimes you have to leave for work before the trash man comes. So you have empty trash cans sitting right next to the street. All of them got knocked over. All of them wound up down the street. It was not easy.
So these brightly colored bags of dog crap were becoming projectiles going throughout Boston Common. Like, you'd look up, and every, like, 30 seconds or so, you would just see this thing go 3 feet and hit the ground. Like, different colors all over the place. I barely saw a trash can standing as we were going down there. They're the big metal ones, too, and they were getting knocked over. And then people were sending me videos of them. Like, some guy from WBZ tweeted out a video of him going over, like, under this this overpass. And it looked like part of the blacktop, like, got ripped off of the road and flipped over the overpass and hit the cars underneath it.
Did not see that video.
Oh, dude, it was... I've never seen anything like that before. I've never felt anything like that before. And there was a point where I almost got knocked over, but I had to walk at almost a full 45-degree angle to just not take off. And I'm like 180 pounds.
My question is the weather worse now than it was when we were kids?
Oh, I have
it
no
seems
idea.
That way.
I don't know. I mean, I know.
I mean, I never, I'm with you. I never have experienced wind like that when I've been outside. There were a couple of tropical storms and hurricanes that have come through here. I've been inside for those. But it just seems like the weather's a lot more violent when it zips through here than it used to be.
And also, you know, not to mention there's the pictures of houses that got smashed by trees. I mean, just trees getting ripped off.
People and, like, missing, people without power. Some still are.
Oh, sure, and all of that. And the other thing that's kind of creepy, too, is that I was looking at some of the buildings that were downtown, and you can very clearly see some of the windows in the side of the buildings doing a, like, a little warble, which to me is genuinely terrifying. I mean, obviously, they're built to withstand this kind of... I mean, you would think that today's measures and what they have to do and the kind of standards that you have to build a building. But as somebody who knows jack crap about any kind of construction, and you're walking by and you say...
Eric Fisher.
Something goes into your stomach going, well, I mean, that would be just a disaster if one of those were to pop out and just kind of fall, you know, 32 floors.
Yeah. Apparently, it was worse up in ski country. I mean,
you're a maniac.
Not just that. Wind gusts apparently topped 130 miles an hour up on some of the mountains. And some of those, I don't know if they were, you know, cell towers or whatever, got bent over all the way over, not collapsed, but bent into a horseshoe by some of these winds.
Yeah, I mean,
at the top of some of those ski mountains.
I went skiing at a place that usually has like 7 or 8 lifts open in like a gondola. And when I went, they had shut down all of them but one. And basically the one was just for the bravest because they're like, you're getting a little ride as you're going up. And to that I was like, well, I'm not a maniac. I mean, I don't absolutely have to die today. or at least vomit. You know, I'm not in a rush to do that. I know some people might be. But, I mean, it was, I've never seen anything like it yesterday. All right, 617-779-0985. Everyone's got an opinion on the Robert Kraft thing, including
pompous mountains and Maine.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Mr. Bob Fesco.
Let's hear it.
He has been, he's of course the guy who during the Super Bowl run said this about the Patriots.
Hey, Boston, kiss my ass twice.
He don't like the Patriots very much, and he is licking his chops. We have some audio from the Bob Fesco show about what's going on with Robert Kraft. We'll have that right after John Wallach's headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.